When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But I love eating people. I love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. I've seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. I am the great and powerful Mr. E.
And I'm J Clone 27. I like 27.
I'm just Jay.
Just Jay. 27.
And
we're joined by a special guest in studio today.
In studio. It's been a long time, actually.
Yeah. What's our studio called? Did we ever name it?
Yeah. Crypto Corn Studio.
Oh, okay. It's not my name.
We used to have a name for it. It's been a long time since we
had it. I thought it was Fat Muckett Studios.
It is. It's Fat Muckett Studios.
Yeah. I like the Fat Muckett. But we're joined by a guest.
I'll intro his name, but you go ahead. Tell us who he's speaking at, what he does.
This guest with us today is speaking at the Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree, October 5th. He's shared his story once before publicly, and so this will be a treat for y'all. He's a local researcher to Ohio, but you'll learn more about that once the Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree comes around.
Which we have some updates. I guess we'll probably sprinkle in the middle of this episode.
Sure, why not?
I'm just saying.
And he has an awesome hat.
Yes. Welcome to Fat Muckett Studios, Jake Driscoll.
Dressel.
What?
Okay. Dressel.
Driscoll.
Okay.
Justin's always good for messing up my last name. He likes to mess with me on that one.
I did it one time, and now it's a thing.
Every time.
It's always stuck.
I think I did it. I did it correctly one time recently.
It was probably by accident, though.
No, I did it because we were announcing speakers. I think me and him did a video.
So you had to do it right.
So I did it appropriately. But no, Jake, thank you for coming in studio. We had a fun day.
My pleasure. We've had a blast today.
Yeah. What did we do today?
We mucked around in a swamp looking for pint-sized midget Bigfoots up here not too far from where Jay and Mr. E here live in Northwest Ohio.
Fat Muckett Studios.
Fat Muckett Studios. In that creek, there probably were Fat Muckets.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, we missed out.
That Virginia Creepers.
Do you know what a Fat Muckett is?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I'm better with pictures than I am in names. If I saw one, I'd be like, you wouldn't know. Okay.
So it's a type of mussel.
Okay.
Like the freshwater bivalves.
Right.
So it's one of the joke a long time ago is that biologists either name things like purple pocketbook because it looks like a purple pocketbook, the mussel. And then this one's called a fat mucket. It just sounds dirty.
Put Red Lobster into bankruptcy?
Yes, it's fat muckets. But no, a fat mucket's an endangered species of mussel.
Selling them low-key at the all-you-can-eat shrimp on Tuesday.
I still remember as a kid, Indian Lake, diving for mussels.
I thought it was all you can eat Fat Mucket Fridays.
Fat Mucket Fridays, all you can eat. We but promise you end up.
That sounds like a Long John Mucket. Silver's deal, not Red Lobster.
Same thing.
What did you say about the kid? Died?
What?
In Indian Lake?
No, kid. They used when I was a kid, they used to dive for him at Indian
dive.
Lake.
Oh,
how do you dive in Indian Lake? It's like 4 feet deep.
Yeah, when you're pulling 500-600 pounds of muscles out the bottom. It's more of just shoving muscles in the bag.
You're just standing in a bunch of sludge all day.
Right, yeah.
I heard your encounter years before I ever met you. I mean, Shannon's podcast. Hi, Shannon. Into the Fray. One of the ones I always listen to, you know, forever. So just, it's one of these things we were talking about today, where how surreal some of this stuff is going in this circle. And hearing your encounter and hear you talk about it, and now knowing you, you're in Fat Mucket Studios. There's a snake trying to crawl up on you. Right behind you.
They come out of nowhere.
You see it?
I do.
Yeah, that's Butter.
The name of the snake.
The name of the snake is Butter.
Okay.
Pure Irish, or are we just talking regular?
Don't ask him.
Cracker Barrel.
No, so it's one of those crazy rides. So I think we'll start with just kind of getting into your and Leah's encounter. And maybe if you want, we'll talk about what kind of happened today and kind of then get into maybe what you're going to talk about at the Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree.
Absolutely. So before I get into my encounter and my wife's encounter from 2016, I want to do a little prelude. It gets kind of overlooked, and I always put an asterisk by this encounter. It happened back in, it was around 93, it could have been 94. I was 12, 13 years old. Looking back just on the time frame, I'm 99% sure it was 1993. So I grew up in a suburb of Dayton, Ohio called Huber Heights. And so I'm 12 years old at that time. And my best friend lived behind me, Jeff. He was 15, 16 years old. He was a few years older than me. And my mom and my stepdad were split up at the time. So my mom went to a concert with one of her friends in Cincinnati. And so Jeff kind of was spending the night at my house and quasi babysitting me and my brother. And at one point we decided we were going to, he lived behind me, so we would jump the little 3-foot chain link fence to go back and forth to each other's house all the time. And he had a detached 2-car garage in his backyard. And we had known that his dad was going down to a local sports bar to get dinner, and was going to be gone for a little while. And his dad was retired Air Force, very anal retentive when it comes to closing the doors, closing the gate to the yard, all that kind of stuff. So we left my house, went through the backyard, porch lights on. It's 9:30. It's dark out. It's summer. Maybe it's 10 o'clock, but it's definitely dark. And we jump the fence and we walk up. His house is not exactly behind mine. It's off to the side. So it almost like 2/3 of another neighbor covers the backyard. And then the other third is his house. And there's a little walkway that goes up by his detached garage. And we walk up and we notice that all the lights inside of his house are on, his back door is open, and his garage door is up, and that's not what his dad does. His dad closes everything, locks everything, gets mad at Jeff when he doesn't, so it was very odd. So, you know, like I said, we're 12, 15 years old at the time, and so we're going to get a Sega Genesis game from his house, and we're like, maybe there's a burglar in your house. So, you know, us being the little Hardy Boy wannabes that we are, at the time, we're like, well, let's sneak around the garage and see if we can see anybody through his back bay window, if there's anybody in the house. Well, we get to the end of the garage, and out of the corner, and we tell my brother, Josh, we're like, Josh, stay here. We're just going to run over and get this game. You don't need to come with us. He's trying to tag along. You know how kids are. So I see a shadow out of my peripheral vision, and it's running towards, and it hits the fence, and I hear the chain link fence rattle. And my initial reaction is, dang it, Josh, we told you to stay. And then I stop mid-sentence because I can see my brother hanging out the back door of my house under the porch light. And there is this 3-foot tall black humanoid figure crouched on the, it's sitting on the fence, crouched down, and I see a side profile. So the knees are jutted forward. And I'm 12 years old, and you know, I'm scared, you know, I'm completely caught off guard, and I was just stunned for a minute, and it sat there. I saw it. Jeff saw it. My brother saw it. It jumps off the fence. Where we jumped the fence at, there was a big tree in our backyard that we used to climb, and we've tried to put like a tree house in there a few times, but it was basically the tree we hung out in, read comic books and that stuff. So it was very dark. So that's why I always put an asterisk by this, because it was just a black humanoid figure about 3 feet tall on two legs. It jumps down, it hits the fence line into the shadows, and it's gone. And this is 93. This is pre-internet. So I don't know anything about, Bigfoot is something that lives in the Pacific Northwest. I do live about 5 miles from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. So, we spend years, conjecturing on what this thing was when we saw or whatever else, and it kind of fades away. And then in 2016, my wife and daughter convinced me to get a dog. And I'm anti-dog. Like, no, I don't want a dog. I don't want a dog because it's going to end up being my dog. Well, for the first 2 months we had the dog, my father-in-law lived 2 miles away. So we would drop my daughter and the dog off at my father-in-law's house. And he would drop her off at school, keep the dog all day because he had just gotten a new puppy. So they played together all day. Well, come October of September, October of 2016, him and my mother-in-law decide they're going to sell the house because they want to move out into the country. Hey, can't bring the dog over anymore. So I normally get up for work at 5 o'clock in the morning. I work in a tooling and machining shop. I got to be there at 6 a.m. So I got a half hour drive. So I start getting up at 4:30 in the morning. So the first week I walk him like Monday and Wednesday. My wife walks him Tuesday and Thursday. We flip a coin on Friday. I don't remember who walked him on Friday. The second week, so this is the Monday. So this is October 2nd, 2016, I believe. I get up, we live on a hill, and so I walk out my front door, I go to my left, come down the driveway, walk downhill, and there's a pine tree in the bottom corner of my yard. When I get to that pine tree, my dog lunges at it, and at this point, he'd already been sprayed by a skunk twice in the last 2 months that we've had him. So that's my initial thought, it's probably a raccoon, it might be a cat, might be a rabbit. But God, I hope it's not a skunk, because I don't feel like dealing with this before I have to go to work on a Monday. So I walk up into my neighbor's driveway to get a better look, because if it is a skunk, I want to make sure I don't come back that way when I walk the dog. And the dog story is important because I just want to show that, like, I haven't been doing this long enough for anybody to pattern me. So what I see is this three and a half foot tall creature. It was crouched down, but it stands up from the pine tree and it walks out, and then it walks uphill, and at the very corner of my house is another tree, and it puts its arm up on the tree like a person would if you were walking uphill and you put your arm up to steady yourself. It walks along my house, and then we had a fence, and then my neighbor did not, and there's a 5-acre property behind me that's some kind of Montessori school, but it's got a lot of like honeysuckle and it's got a wood patch or whatever, but it walks into that stuff and I'm stunned. And it's a grayish brown color. It reminded me of the color of a cottontail rabbit, for example.
Okay.
That's the best way I can describe it, is it was the color of a cottontail rabbit. It wasn't like, that reddish brown that people describe, or wasn't jet black, but it was, and I had a street light across the street from me. I always have like a 1200 lumen porch light, the neighbor's porch light. So I had pretty good light, and I believe that it was pretty clear that night, but I had a pretty good view. And I just remember thinking to myself when I saw this little, for lack of a better term, it looked like a 3.5 foot tall mini Patty from the Patterson Gimlin footage. Mm-hmm. I never saw the front of it. I only saw it from behind. It had no tail, but it was bulky and it was stout like that. It wasn't like this skinny little monkey thing that you see on Nat Geo or anything like that. And so I watch it walk up the hill and then into the honeysuckle and in the brush and disappear. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I'm not really seeing this. And it was kind of it was more of a shock thing. And the best way I could describe it, I tell people, is like, if the first time you've ever been in a fist fight, or the first time you've ever been in a car accident where you get that tunnel vision and mm-hmm. like you don't hear anything, you don't smell anything, everything's happening in slow motion, and like your brain's trying to process too much information. Mm-hmm. And so I stand there stunned, and then after a few minutes I collect myself, I walk my dog, I come back by, and before I go back in the house I stop there and I'm like, did I really see? I mean, I was questioning my own eyes at that point. And so I go inside, I get ready for work. I don't tell my wife anything about this. And then 24 hours later, she gets up. It's her turn to walk the dog. And she's out walking the dog. And I, you know, we keep our dog food in our garage that's attached to our house and in a metal trash can. So I'm getting the dog's food ready, and I come back in from the garage, and her and the dog walk in, and I can see she's upset. And my first thought is like, hey, is there some crackhead in the neighborhood messing with you while you're out walking the dog or whatever else? And she's like, no. She goes, what do we have around here that's like three and a half feet tall that walks on two legs? I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, what kind of animals do we? I'm like, do you see a raccoon? No. Do you see a possum? No. She goes, this was like a three and a half foot tall, hairy little person. And I thought to myself, an expletive, and I was like, I really did see that. And so I told her, I was like, I saw that yesterday. And she goes, why didn't you say anything? And I was like, I just figured you'd say I watched too much Monster Quest and you wouldn't believe me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what it was. Like, I was like, you know what? Like, you know, how do you process this? So we went back and forth for a few minutes. We both had to get to work. She's a teacher, so she has to be there at 7.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to work. I don't do anything at work that day. I spend my entire day watching YouTube videos. Raccoon walking on two legs. Possum walking on two legs. Like any, you know, I've grown up in Southwest Ohio my entire life. I've been deer hunting and fishing. I've been an outdoorsman my whole life. Like, as an example, like, you know, my dad has taught me track since I was a little kid. I don't remember not knowing the difference between a doe track and a buck track. I've just known that my whole life, just because that's what my dad always taught me. And I've been familiar with all the wildlife in my area. Like, I remember being 10, 12 years old and fishing at my stepdad's boss's pond and fighting raccoons off that were trying to steal crappie off our stringer and stuff like that. I mean, if you've ever been out anywhere, like, you've seen that happen where the raccoons are trying to steal your fish off your stringer. And I mean, like, I've interacted with wildlife my whole life, and what I saw was not something that was part of the normal lexicon of the wildlife in our area.
What you're used to dealing with.
Absolutely. I mean, and you know, I worked a third shift job at a Sam's Club down there when I was like 20, 21 years old. And it was a cupcake third shift is what we always called it, because it was 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. So when we got off work, you know, it was 5 a.m. It's still dark. But, like, I remember driving home from work and, you know, you turn the corner and your headlights hit the raccoons that are
– oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, they're running the sewer, you know, the sewer drains or the storm drains or whatever else. And, I mean, as an example, like, I can literally – I know what the sound of a raccoon climbing a privacy fence sounds like in the dark. I don't have to see it. I'm like, you know – I know what it is. Shine my flashlight. I mean, that's, and I'm not trying to sound arrogant or cocky, but like, it's just typical things in the Midwest when you grow up
right.
in that stuff. Like, yeah. it's a raccoon. It's a squirrel. Like, oh, what's in the attic? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
birds in the wall.
Birds in the wall. Yeah. Like, where are they getting in at? You know, it's that kind of stuff that you just deal with. So it was just a stunning situation to see something that looked like this.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I'd been, you know, this is like 2016. I was friends with Ken Gerhardt on Facebook. And so after Lee and I, you know, because she went to work and did the same thing. She goes, I've been on YouTube. I've looked up videos. She goes, nothing matches. Like, I've seen a video of a raccoon stealing cat food off a porch, and it don't move like that. And I'm like, I agree. I've seen that same video. And so I reached out to him through Facebook, and he called and interviewed us. And he told me, he's like, you know what? I've actually received quite a few reports of these smaller mini Bigfoot type creatures that, and most of the reports I have taken that they are actually more aggressive, that, you know, they are more prone to, you know, kill livestock or, you know, steal chickens and things like that. And, my opinion of the situation is, it was trying to get away from my dog, is kind of looking back on it. I think it was reacting more to my dog.
Paranormal hates dogs.
Right. And like, if I'd have been an early morning jogger or something like that, I think it would have just hunkered down and stayed where it was at.
Right.
Like, anybody, like a trash bag or something, you know.
If you've seen a rabbit, you know, the first thing a rabbit does, it doesn't run.
It freezes.
It freezes. Yeah. And then it only runs when it has to, because its reaction is like, if I hold still, it won't notice me.
Right. Yeah.
And, but
you
I think
people at home are like, no, they always run. No, right. It's because you walk past towards, the ones that you don't notice.
Yeah, right, they're only running after you didn't notice them. And so that was kind of my thing. Like, I think it was in like the next morning, my wife was walking the dog, and where she saw it at was it was about, I think I mapped it out, it was like 400 yards away from where I had my encounter at. So it was like a couple streets over. And like, even though we're in the suburbs, we the suburb I live in shares a southern border with Dayton, but our northern border is basically like when you get the outside of the northern border of Huber Heights, it becomes what we in Western Ohio call the country. It's all mm-hmm. like 40-acre farm here, 100-acre farm there. Maybe somebody's got a 500-acre farm. Mm-hmm. There's lots of forest, wood patches, and we are in a mile and a half basically from the Great Miami River, which flows all the way down from Indian Lake, and it has tributaries coming down from Lake Erie. And the best I can determine at this point was something had maybe wandered up from the river, into the neighborhood looking for food or trash or just curiosity. We see coyotes in our neighborhood when I'm out walking the dog. I've seen white-tailed deer wander in the neighborhood. Like when you go through the side streets to get out to the main road, like there's literally a 100-acre farm that's got corn and soybeans in it, and that you see deer and coyotes standing in all the time. And it's one of those things, like, it took me a long time to talk about, because like I'm in the suburbs, and it's like, who sees Bigfoot or even a mini Bigfoot, or was this a juvenile Bigfoot? And so that's kind of what's led me down the path of research that I have pursued for the last 5 to 8 years really strongly. Ken Gerhard reached out to me a couple years after my encounter, and he wrote his essential guide to Bigfoot and asked if he could include my account or mine and my wife's account in his book. And I agreed and said he could use the drawings and stuff. And then in 2019, he was at the Toledo Paranormal Conference, and I'd never been to any cons or anything like that at that point. So my wife and I decided we were going to drive up and meet Ken and buy his book and all that stuff. And so we get up there, and then I leave the conference, and I'm like, all right, you know, what do I do now? Like, I've had this encounter, and I don't know what to do, and I'm interested, and I'm just kind of like this guy who grew up next to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base his whole life who was interested in UFOs, and
yeah.
I got stuck with this midget Bigfoot. And so I started doing some research, and I started looking around, and then I've stumbled upon a cluster of sightings, all for the most part within like a 10-mile radius of where I live, of other people who have found or had encounters with this 3 to 5 foot tall, hairy, bipedal mini Bigfoot creature. And it's been quite a journey, and it's a rabbit hole to fall down to. And as somebody who grew up, and like I said, I was 12 years old in 1993. So I remember going and seeing like Fire in the Sky in the movie theaters when I, you know, with my best friend and his dad. The X-Files came out that fall, and I grew up next to Wright Pat, so I was always a UFO guy. Like, aliens were my thing, and like midget Bigfoots were not on my bingo card.
Oh, yeah.
that's kind of what I say. I was like, that's not what I would have picked to get into. You
right.
know? It's like if I wanted to, you know, make up an encounter, I'd have told somebody I saw a black triangle, and they'd been like, where do you live at? And I'm like, oh, next to Wright Pat. And you'd be like, oh yeah, I believe that. Mm-hmm. But no, I definitely wouldn't have picked midget Bigfoots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is kind of interesting though, that how it's something completely out of your purview that put you into this field, like full force put you into it.
Right. Cause you know, I mean, like I said, you know, this was, you know, for the most part, you know, when I had my encounter, in 93, I shared all this on Shannon LeGros Into the Fray podcast. She bugged me for a year and a half because after I got back from the Toledo Paranormal Con, I found her Facebook group, and I was asking people questions, just trying to find information. Because at that point, the only thing I'd ever come across, I didn't know about albatwitches at that point or anything like that. The only thing I'd ever seen is I'd watched the Bridgewater Triangle documentary, and there was a guy in there who described this little puck wudgie, but their depiction made it look, it was a little skinnier looking thing. My problem with puck wudgies is the accounts of puck wudgies vary wildly. They go anywhere from these little mini Bigfoot creatures to mini Native Americans to goblins from the Lord of the Rings. Like,
I mean, agree with that statement, but when you really start peeling back a lot of the research and going into really, really old school, we've talked about on this show a lot about the Native American tribes and stuff and the wars, and then after the white settlement, how much legend and lore was lost.
Right.
And so a lot of that was piecemealed.
Right.
From all these tribes just trying to kind of pick up something. If you go back far enough, they were very much these chunky, a lot of people called them like porcupines.
Right.
They look like porcupine people, which because porcupines kind of got really big, fat, wide hips, big, fat, wide bodies. But have you ever been around a porcupine? Yeah, but they look like people.
Right.
They can stand up on their hind legs. They kind of walk around. You know, they're very goofy, as in, because they don't care.
Yeah.
If you're around porcupines, most time, they don't care about people. So they'll do the goofiest thing, standing, you know, 3 foot from you. So for your encounter, I jokingly said puckwudgies earlier. But that's kind of the vibe I get, because the big, you know, explain, I guess, to the people. Me and you and Jay have talked about this together much more extensively.
Right.
Maybe some of the listeners have ever heard. So I guess really kind of talk about what the thing actually looked like.
So the best description I can give you is it looked like, it literally, like if you watched the Patterson and Gimlin footage, imagine Patty being 3.5 feet tall. And that's basically what it looked like, with a little more grayish, like not so, it's not that reddish brown Bigfoot that Patty is. Like the coloring was a little off. It was, like I said, it was a brownish gray. Like it was really reminding me of the coloring of a cottontail rabbit. Mm-hmm. Or a brindle color, which at the time I didn't associate brindle with anything other than dogs until I read an account in Doug Waller's book that he'd shown me last year at Ohio Bigfoot Festival.
I mean, one of Doug's books.
Yeah. Doug's a good guy, and he's got a lot of knowledge, especially in Southeast Ohio. So shout out to him. Literally, you have... And you have, North America is always an anomaly, and the fossil record here is sketchy at best because we do have the glaciation, and you know,
and
that's always my thing is like how much fossils was destroyed when the glaciers melted,
everything out,
like anything that could carve the Grand Canyon, like isn't leaving bones of 3 foot anything behind.
Well, I think a lot of our listeners have that idea now that of actually how rare fossils are.
Right.
You know, we know 1% of 1% of all species that live on this planet are either alive or in the fossil record. Right. So just now you have more, it didn't matter how recent, you know, even for a small species, it's much rarer for a small species to fossilize than a big species. It's a lot harder to move around a femur that's 3 or 4 foot long, let alone a whole skeleton that's 3 or 4 foot long.
And, you know, we have more fossil evidence of small hominids in the fossil record than we do large ones. You know, you have Australopithecus, Homo nodelli, Homo forensiensis, which lived as recently as 12,000 years ago.
Don't sell too much. I'm just saying.
I won't sell too much, but I'm just saying, you know, the interesting thing occurs with the fossil record is that you have all these small hominids in Africa, South Africa especially, which is a long way from the island of Flores. And once you get outside of Africa, there's not a whole, there's like almost zero small hominid fossils until Homo forensiensis pops up.
Right.
You know, 20 years ago, basically. So, you know, you mean to tell me that those small hominids were able to travel and not, I mean, they're either there, they're destroyed. So,
right.
You know, and then you have, you know, the Bering Land Bridge. How long was it accessible? There's a lot out there as far as the fossil record goes that's unknown.
I was just going to say, hominoid history is probably sketchy at best.
Oh. I mean, all biological history is sketchy at best.
Yeah. Right.
But hominoids are, you know,
it's close to us, and it's close to us, so it means more. So
I think there's more people that think that they have a better understanding of it.
Absolutely, because it's us.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, I know how people came to be.
Right.
You know, right. So, I don't know, I really, you know, we messed around all day today and talked about it. I really think you've seen puckwudgies, whatever puckwudgies are.
Right.
I was going to ask, do you think it's the same type of thing when you were a kid as in 2016?
So
you still live in Heber Heights.
Right.
Correct. So it's funny because after I went on Shannon's podcast, she received an email that she forwarded to me that a listener who graduated high school in 1993, there is a place up off of Taylorsville Road called the Duck Pond. Anybody from the area knows where that is. And there's a creek that runs from the duck pond down past Wayne High School, which is where I grew up, right behind,
down the Great Miami River. Literally, the closest point that creek crosses from the house I grew up in when I was 12 is about 400 yards.
Wow.
And in 93, he said that after he graduated, him and his buddies were out in the woods, the backwoods, the duck pond. They'd climb the fence and go back there and smoke cigarettes and whatever else. And they saw what he described as a 3-foot-tall mini Bigfoot-type creature.
Same time frame as you.
Same summer I saw mine encounter.
Mm-hmm. That literally happened on our show.
Yep.
2.5 mm-hmm. miles up the literally up the creek by my house.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, like I said, I put an asterisk by what I saw because I didn't get a clear look at it. But he described the same thing that I saw in 2016,
right,
which could have been a similar creature to what I saw
right.
when I was a kid. And I'll be honest with you, when I first had my sighting, I didn't put that together because in 93 there was no internet. This was pre-internet. This was
it was a rough time.
Pre-X files, like the best you got was you'd go to your school library and you'd get an amalgamation book that had a chapter on Atlantis, a chapter on D.B. Cooper, a chapter on
right.
Those were good books, though.
They're some of my favorite books.
Do absolutely. Not,
how many people in this field, that was the only spark right. they ever got?
Yeah, right. You got that and Unsolved Mysteries and Leonard Nimoy's In Search Of.
I think I had a Bigfoot book, though. Yeah. Had serial Beyond Belief, Factor,
Fiction.
I mean,
all that stuff spurred that curiosity.
I mean, so this is like I said, this is pre sightings.
Right.
This is pre all that
pre
stuff.
Pre mountain monsters.
Yeah, this is pre monster. I mean, this is way before.
Love
so, like,
monsters.
You know, again, like I said, you know, Bigfoot at that time was something that existed in the Pacific Northwest.
Right.
Maybe in Florida or like the swamps.
We had about a 30 Harry year and the period in the U.S. where that was the thought.
Right.
I mean, a hard time where Bigfoot was invented in the 60s.
Right.
And he only lives out in the Pacific Northwest.
Right. I think there's still people that's still the thing.
I'm not saying they don't. I'm right. saying that was the narrative.
Right, right. That was the main. Oh, gotcha.
It's completely
gotcha.
Switched now.
Yeah, right.
Like,
for sure.
I never, look at Bee's event.
Like, right. I'd never heard of the Minerva Monster when I was a kid.
Right.
Yeah,
like,
right.
I mean,
and it's like, there
was
no
how crazy like, was that?
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that wasn't an encounter. That was an ongoing
years.
You know, interaction. Year interaction that family had. And I lived in Ohio, and that's maybe 2.5-3 hours away from where I live. But like, we didn't go north. Like my family's from West Virginia, from the South. Like we didn't go that far north. We had no business being up there. I had never heard of them. At that point, the Minerva Monster was like an urban legend in northern Ohio.
Right.
So I'd never even heard of that until into the 2000s. So
Tower 25 straight.
Yep.
What or east?
I knew nothing of that stuff when I was a kid. Like I said, when I was a kid, I was into UFOs. The big thing was Wright-Patterson Air Force Base was
you lived right next.
Yeah,
to
Yeah. I lived next to it. I grew up next to it. You know, my friend's parents worked at it. You know. It was one of those things, like, we have that little footnote in the Roswell story. Like, that was my wheelhouse, you know? I mean, I grew up in a house without air conditioning, so in the summer we'd go to the Air Force Museum because they had air conditioning and it was free.
You could stay there all day for free, yeah.
Stay all there all day for free, you know?
Right. So it was soak it up.
Yeah, it was just one of those things where, like,
my mom was supposed to go out in the yard and pick up rocks.
Yeah. I didn't have Bigfoot on the brain when I was a kid, and I mean, when I got disillusioned with UFOs in the early 2000s because I thought we'd have gotten further.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I'm not gonna lie, I started watching Monster Quest because I thought
Monster Quest.
I thought it was great, and I think Doug Hychek or whatever. I think he did a great job with that, especially at the time.
He's still doing cool work.
And he's still doing great work. But like, you know, even then, like you never heard of Pukwudgies or these little things. It was always
talked about us a couple weeks ago.
It was right. the main ones.
It was always the main
Doug
ones.
Hychek show. I think they were just talking about us a couple weeks ago.
About what?
Hyenas.
How cool we are.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, they said you said hyenas?
Yeah.
I thought you said they were talking about us.
Well, they were, but...
Oh, through the hyena connection. Yes. Okay.
No, but no, he's got a great show right now, too.
Yeah. They're like, these two rednecks up in northern Ohio are talking about corn and hyenas.
Yeah.
You got any corn? I tell you what. No, so you've done a lot with this. You know, a lot of spurred off of the one little person encounter. I don't know what you want to call it. Little Bigfoot, or
I've taken to calling it Littlefoot. Just it's a name I kind of got stuck with. Ken Gerhard likes to call them pygmy squatches. I'm good with that too.
Which there might be something to that.
And you know, I don't marry myself to ideas, so I don't know.
No, you should grow and change.
Right. So of all the videos I've watched, a ton of videos on juvenile gorillas and chimps, and they're clumsy like human children are.
Yeah.
And they are not, they're skinny. This thing was bulky. It sounds crazy, but the best way I could describe is it looked like a 3.5 foot tall patty. It never turned and looked at me. I never saw the front of it. But that's probably how lucky. It moved.
And it was like a void face and
right.
Like deep sea angler teeth and, you know.
Or what if it had a face in its chest and it was a blimmy?
Okay.
All right.
On that note, let's take an ad break. Let me find one. All right. I don't know. I can't read them from here. But let's see what this one is. We'll be right back.
Hey, we're down here at Mel's Hole, and Justin, where'd you go?
Help! I'm falling down the hole!
You fell down Mel's Hole?
Yes, I keep falling, and I think I'm going to be falling for a really, really long time.
Oh, no. How long till I... You have enough time for me to get a rescue crew?
I think I do, but I'm really hungry, and I found a dead tumor seal as I was falling. But it looks absolutely disgusting. Do you have anything to help?
I think I have just the thing. Here, let me toss down a couple of bottles of Flavors of the Forest Bigfoot Breath.
Really, really chuck them so they catch up.
Here it comes, one. And two.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to eat this tumor seal now with Flavors of the Forest. Where could the other people get this amazing product to cook their own tumor seal?
You can get this wonderful, amazing, tasty product at flavorsforest.com/corn. Add it to anything, and it will make your food taste delicious.
And we're back.
Okay.
So yeah, one thing I wanted to talk to you about is that, like what you said, is when we talk about primates and humans, almost always, even when we talk about Bigfoot encounters and sightings, the very few we have with a baby Bigfoot being seen with an adult Bigfoot. So we kind of have an idea it's the same species. We don't know anything, but that's a pretty good idea if you see those two things together, you know, they're the same thing. They're almost always really skinny.
Right.
Like lanky, skinny. And if you look at gorillas and stuff like that, and even human babies, there are fat human babies right off the womb. I don't know what's more common for humans, but when we talk about like the great apes, like gorillas and orangutans, they come out really skinny, and then they put on weight.
Right. But even once they get active, like once they start walking and stuff, they start
they're
burning.
They're still pretty lanky.
They're still pretty lanky. They start burning off that baby fat and stuff. And you know, it's one of those things... And that's what I've done my research on the BFRO, the Bigfoot Mapping Project, and the cases I've documented in my area, there's no corroborating big and little sightings. So let's say in 1993, there are two little one sightings, but there's no 7-foot Bigfoot reported within 5 or 6 years either direction. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, if you have a little one reported in June of 93 and you've got a 7-foot one reported 3 miles away in August of 93, you could say, well, that was a big one and a small one, and you just saw the kid and you just saw the mother. My thing is like, I've documented about 10 cases within a 10-mile period over a 30-year period. So,
wait, okay, say that again for me.
I've documented about 10 different cases or about 8 different cases over a 10 mile radius over a 30 year period.
Okay.
So
been drinking since
right. One. So either somebody's not watching their kids or there's something else going on.
You're just a PSA. The fair is not your babysitter for the week.
Well, that came out of nowhere.
No, people not watching their kids made me think of this.
Right.
Is I help run a department at the fair.
Yeah.
And I cannot tell you how many parents.
Oh, I believe. I know.
My department is the biggest department for kids.
Yeah.
I have 213 kids in my department.
Yeah.
I don't watch your kids.
No, yeah.
It's not my job.
No, it's not. You're here to judge chickens.
Essentially.
Right.
No, so I cannot tell you how many parents are like, it happened last year was a really bad one where... Some mom came up after she'd been at work all day. She's like, where's Timmy?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I don't know. Why don't you know where Timmy is? I don't even know who Timmy is. What are you freaking talking about?
Yeah.
No, I left him. I dropped him off here at 8 o'clock. Someone, wait. It's not even one of my 4-H kids.
Yeah.
You know, I'll watch. I have my own 4-H group, but, you know, it's just. Yeah.
Bear's not your babysitter.
No. Bear's not your babysitter.
So, you know, for a species that is highly secretive and highly evasive, for them just let their young ones run around suburbs of northern Dayton unattended seems a little wild.
Irresponsible, you know? To me.
Right, yeah. I'm like, man, we need to call some CPS on these Bigfoots down here in southern Ohio.
That's how we prove their existence. We call CPS.
They're
good.
They'll find them.
Being too close to 75, they must have gotten that fentanyl line or something. I don't know. Yeah. We gotta get mom and dad back on track here.
Jake's been muted. Remember, a family-friendly show, main show.
I mean...
Truth is truth. One warning. It's a warning.
Truth is truth.
I don't know. Shannon didn't give me any warnings, apparently.
I kept it clean for the most part.
Just saying. No, I mean, I know what you've seen. I kept the secret until literally right now. I want to do it on the show. After all this research and all this time talking to you, I actually know what you've seen.
What's that?
A badger is standing up.
You know what?
Case closed. Quit your research.
Case closed.
Take the hat off. Hang it up.
I've been the Ring of Powerful Mystery.
And I've been Jake Lund.
No, everybody at home, we did some stuff today and looking into some little Bigfoot sightings. And that's one of the people said, was what? Somebody who's seen little, like badgers standing up.
Oh, yeah.
In Ohio, we did have our first badger in Hardin County last year.
Nice.
Which was the first one in Northwest Ohio in like 100 years.
About time they're back.
But even when they're here, they're very secretive, and I didn't look into it because we literally just sat down and started recording. I don't think they can stand.
No,
I think they may be able to like kind of spy hop,
right?
Like kind of peek up and like look. I don't think they can.
They don't walk bipedally for uphill.
But I know once I say if I give a hard stance on it, somebody's going to literally show me one that stood up and got on a unicycle and was riding around in a circus.
Yeah, shooting basketballs and.
No, I don't know. What do you think you've seen?
My initial impression was whatever I saw was not a juvenile. It felt
comfortable.
It did not run for me. It walked smoothly and confidently. Like, anybody knows, like, hey, guess what? If you see a bear or a mountain lion, the worst thing you can do is run.
Run because then you're food.
You move slowly away, and that's what this thing did. It looked like it knew what it was doing.
It wanted to get away from you, but it wasn't like
it panicked. Wasn't trying to draw. In a rush. And my wife described the same thing. And the key was like my dog is the only thing that's seen this thing twice.
Right. Yeah.
You know. I mean, he was with
that
me.
Is true.
Me the first day.
Yeah.
And my wife the second day. And but like my dog, I think the deciding factor is had my wife just been out jogging in the morning or something before work,
she wouldn't have seen it.
I don't think she'd have seen it. But
I mean, Bigfoot and Bigfoot like creatures,
right?
Do not like dogs,
right?
And I think that's the reason is because they know they blow their cover,
right? And you know, I like to throw this out here. I don't want to give away too much, but you know, if you look at like Australia. They have a big Yowie and a little Yowie.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the Yeti in the Himalayas. There are three types of Yeti. There's a 3 to 5 foot tall Yeti. There's a 6 to 7 foot tall Bigfoot-like Yeti. And then there's a larger one that most researchers have come to conclusions is probably a bear of some sort.
I'm in that group because that the actual DNA, they got mitochondrial DNA off of hair samples.
Well, I don't want to sidetrack the conversation, but I'm very skeptical of Brian Sykes's DNA study for one reason is because initially he came to the conclusion, and this even leads into Zana, that it was a polar bear brown bear hybrid found in the Himalayas, and then other geneticists looked at his results and said no, he's wrong on that. So if he's wrong on the if he's wrong on the bear, is he also wrong on Zana or
the
X, Y, and Z?
Anybody that didn't know.
And you know,
actually, I think she's scheduled for season 6.
What's that?
Zana, the Bigfoot woman, the Russian slave.
And I think she may have been a Denisovan.
She could have been all kinds of things.
Right.
Why don't I know about this?
You don't know about Zayna?
I don't think so.
Off air. And actually, we're not going to talk about it because it's in season 6.
All right.
All right.
I don't tell him tonight.
Hell, right. I'm tempted to come back on for that one. That'd be a good one.
Yeah. But, you said Zayna. I was Zayna.
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 Okay. Yep. Z-A-N-A. Zayna.
I thought it was Zima.
I don't know if it's Zana or the Zayna, drink? But yeah.
Let me out.
But when you get to these, and then you get to Alaska, you have the Bigfoots up there, and you have the small hairy dwarves they talk about in Alaska. Something odd happens on the Pacific Northwest in the United States. You don't really get a lot of small hairy creatures, but when you get back down into Mexico and South America, you get the duendes and the hairy dwarves down there again.
Wait, have you been up there? There's a reason nothing little lives.
Right.
You have to be really tiny or really big.
I mean, right.
We talked about it. I'm joking.
But you know what? Alaska's not that much different. You know, I mean, it gets a little more sketchy up there. But it's vast.
It's so. Very different, in my opinion, as far as calorie drive goes.
That makes sense.
Because you have 3 months out of the year. It's not like our winters. It's not
actually,
like
even you know, there's probably a calorie surplus along like BC and Alaska versus Washington, Oregon, and California.
I think Alaska's. We're all of opinions. I think Alaska is probably the scariest place to run into a big.
Oh, absolutely.
Because 3 or 4 months out of the year, calories are like deadlining.
Right. But I mean,
you have to dig them up. Like
all seen the videos of the bear carcasses washing up. I mean, if you're coastal, you're good. But inland is when it gets very, very tough there.
That's a limited number of animals. I mean, you look at the Kodiaks.
Right.
It's just the biggest Kodiaks, and they patrol.
They're on one island.
Their line, their shoreline, and the other Kodiaks have to stand inside and starve to death until they're done eating.
And like I said, when you get into Washington, and you know you have the human presidents, especially Northern California, Washington, Oregon, and so it's odd, and it's not saying that there aren't reports out there. I just haven't found any in that area.
Sure,
but you get to.
I think if they are little Bigfoots in that area, I think they're definitely. Taking better care of them.
Yeah.
As in keeping them much more secret.
Absolutely.
Because grizzlies, I don't care who you are.
Oh, they'll eat anything.
A grizzly is going to eat it.
Oh, absolutely.
If a grizzly can, it will. Let alone short-faced bears.
Wink.
That's one of... I want that painting so bad.
What?
It's an old... It says, old man's last fight. And it's an old Sasquatch that ran into one of the last short-faced bears. And he's about to get wrecked.
Yeah. That'd be a cool scenario.
It's a cool painting because there's a Bigfoot. You just see the Bigfoot looking up at the short-faced bear.
Like, oh, here we go.
Like, this is it.
The last stand.
Maybe when he was young, you know.
He could have took him.
Yeah, but now.
But this is a grizzled old vet. He's been seeing some things.
Short-faced bears. I mean, we've talked about them.
Vicious.
I don't think people understand, even doing this show, what a short-faced bear was to humans. Or human-like things.
Oh, yeah.
They literally had a jaw specialized in just taking the skull cap off. Like, they just would bite the top of your head off, and...
And it's not just short-faced bears. Like, the megafauna of the
Pleistocene... in general.
I mean, saber-toothed cats. You had North American hyenas.
Any of them over a short-faced bear.
Okay. Fair enough.
Giant ground sloth, 25 foot tall at the shoulder.
Well, I would take Cro-Magnon man against any of them.
I don't want an atlatl or a spear against any of those. Like, give me a gun.
You imagine trying to use an atlatl to kill a short-faced bear?
No thanks.
Took a man.
Ha! And it sticks right in the shoulder and just looks at you. Like, oh, that's not good. He may bleed out in a couple days.
Yeah.
But it didn't take a man. It took a large man.
Yeah.
It took a village.
Well.
Of all atlatls. That's what it was. It was 500 of them going off at one time.
Yeah.
And then, oh. Yeah. No, sorry, continue.
But, I'm drawing a blank on the name. It starts with a C, but south of Hershey, Pennsylvania, they have the Albatwitch.
Mm-hmm.
And they have there's a cluster of sightings there. They actually have a festival out there every year, the Albatwitch Festival.
We got invited this year. We couldn't go.
And they always describe this 3 to 5 foot tall. And Albatwitch is a bastardization of apple snitch, is a commonly, because they used to steal all the apples from the orchard and stuff like that. But they still get reports from that area of a smaller hairy hominid consistently. And then I've found some reports from Mr. Mark Muncy. He has graciously told me call them down in Florida, they call them stump jumpers. So,
he's coming on the show
and next that week. They are described distinctly different as being that they're not juvenile Bigfoot. So I like to say I don't marry myself to ideas. I would like to think that whatever I encountered
was its own thing, and it's something physical that I could catch and or whatever. But I mean, I'm not opposed to the idea of it being a juvenile Bigfoot or even, you know, we can go down the fairy route, even though I experienced nothing high strangeness. There was no orbs. There was no odd smells. There was
What is high strangeness?
Right. Where do you draw that line?
So, seeing a 4 foot tall, chunky humanoid.
That's kind of high strangeness.
Well, I personally don't like the term supernatural or paranormal. There is no supernatural. Broad. There's natural we don't understand.
Absolutely.
Yes. There's no paranormal. There's normal we don't understand.
Yes.
Human beings are the most arrogant creatures on the planet. We think we know everything, and we refuse to accept the idea that we may not be capable of processing everything in the universe.
Mm-hmm. It's because we were taught that at a young age and the Rockefeller education system.
Yes.
And you know how much I hate the term with anything to do with science, as in people saying what scientists believe and stuff like that. No, it's not true. Because
scientists believe that that's the first word. Like you want to say science is fact, and then it's a thing. Scientists currently believe. Well, you believe that that's a but that requires a in leap that of faith,
right? Absolutely.
What I was getting at is there's so many scientists that are highly credible. They disagree with each other.
Right.
You can find any highly credible scientist to agree with your side of the argument.
So there's
as long as they're peer reviewed.
There was a man named Arthur C. Clarke, and he had three laws. And they got to a point before he died, he added a fourth law, and it was for every expert, there's an equal and opposite expert.
Because it's factual.
It's true.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is that peer review is, you know, we talked about it, you know, it's just it has nothing to do with science.
Right.
Getting a paper peer-reviewed is absolutely nothing to do with science. It's all about publications and press releases and administrators. Almost all those administrators that get stuff peer-reviewed and published have nothing to do with science. They do not care about what the article was about. They care about the headline
and
how much money it'll bring to the university they're working for.
Absolutely. And, you know,
I just always speak for the scientists because I know there's plenty of scientists that believe in Bigfoot.
Look,
and they're the guys that, you know, get lumped in with the people that are saying, you know.
I support the scientific method.
Sure.
Yeah. Yes.
Scientists are people and as such are fallible.
Mm-hmm.
So the scientific method, and the problem is we've seen, I've literally watched people run an experiment three times and then keep running it because they didn't get the result they wanted. And
the definition of madness.
Yeah, that's the definition of madness. At that point, you've stepped beyond science and into...
I mean, you do it two or three times, but if you do it 60, you know...
I always thought you had to trust the science and just blindly trust it. Whatever the science says,
you trust... Way to go.
Sorry, I thought I heard... I think the door cracked for just a second.
Oh.
And I think Wilbur peeked in.
Those guys are recording
next. We're down... Oops, I don't know what I just did.
No, wrong, completely
what'd I do?
Wrong thing.
Dang it. Hey, right color.
Yeah,
darn
three
it.
Three pages over. Nobody knows what you did.
I don't even know. What did I do?
You were playing a different Flavors of the Forest ad.
Oh, whoops.
I feel like I've been talking a lot. You guys have any questions?
Well, no, that's what the point is.
Did you answer that when I asked you?
I'm sorry.
If
no, it's how we are.
Yeah, I forgot until just now because I was thinking about it. Did you... The thing you saw in 93 and 2016.
Do you feel the same?
Looking back, do you think it might have been
the same? Maybe not the same animal or same individual,
but same
phenomena.
Type of phenomena.
I lean that direction. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't even make that connection. So I went down, you know, once I got a little bit old, I never forgot that thing. That always stuck with me. And I went down the rabbit hole of, like, was it a shadow person? Was it this or that?
Yeah.
But like,
so you didn't really get any detail off that first
one. No, it was literally like a 3.5 foot, but it was like black, and it was in the shadows and the light.
Right.
I was 12.
Right, like, on the edge of.
I was a kid. Like, I'm not going to lie, I was scared. We were not prepared for that.
Did you forget about it as time went on?
I never forgot about it. It's funny because after I went on Shannon's podcast, I'd sent my brother that podcast, and the first thing he said to me was, dude, that's the thing we saw when I was 12. And for whatever reason, like...
So you didn't share that the first time you were on with Shannon?
Leah brought it up, and I was like,
we didn't even talk about poor Leah.
Yeah, my wife brought it up, and she was like, hey, do you think that thing that you saw that when you were 12? And I was like, you know what? I didn't think about that. And then, you know, the crazy part was it got brought up in Shannon's interview, but the crazy part was when
that guy forwarded Shannon the or sent that Shannon that email that, hey, look, you know, I saw something the same summer he did.
Yeah.
2 miles away from where he lived at. And it's like, well, I mean, if we're doing deductive reasoning here, it's highly possible. Like, I lean that direction.
Right.
I want to believe that it was either the same creature or the same type of creature in 93 that that guy saw 2 miles away from my house.
And you potentially have seen it twice now.
Right. And now I've seen, in your life. Yeah. And I saw at two different points, 23 years apart, yep. You know?
I know what it is.
Oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
A badger?
No.
Oh.
A frog man with a fungal infection.
Oh, the fungal frog man. Well, there is legends.
That make them look fuzzy.
I showed you what. No, they do.
They hang out around creeks.
The fungal infection looks like hair.
It does, yeah, but that's in the water.
It does outside, too, if it's rigid.
I guess you're right. Maybe.
When I'm right, I'm right.
I bet it tastes like chicken.
I bet it doesn't.
The fungal frog?
Yeah, I bet it doesn't. I bet if you eat that, you will die.
Yeah, you know what? My mom got food poisoning from KFC when she was like 20 years old, and she refused to eat it to this day.
Now we're going to have to cut that out.
Why?
Because he mentioned a name brand.
Oh, my bad.
That's all right. You're allowed to say that.
All right.
You're allowed to say it. It's past the 10-minute mark.
Well, it's way past
10 minutes. Yeah, the algorithms don't even look that deep.
Yeah, KFC does.
The Colonel. Well,
stop saying the name.
Yeah, I freaking care.
The Colonel.
No, that's it's super interesting. And Lee has seen it too.
Yeah.
I mean.
And that's the thing is like, so my wife had a sighting 24 hours later, unprompted. So she didn't know that I'd seen it 24 hours before.
I was going to say, I trust Leah more than I trust you.
Well, I understand that. She looks more trustworthy than I do.
Me and Leah talked for like 3.5 hours while you went and tried to find us beer.
Trust me. It was I literally was trying to find beer. It was rough at Monster Fest last week. Or 2 weeks ago.
Whatever it was. These guys here, it's going to be a month and a half ago.
Right, yeah. It was, I mean, if you could find a drink at Monster Fest at that bar.
Good on you.
I mean.
You paid $100 for it.
You won.
It's like Steel Excalibur out of that wall in France. How'd you get up there?
Yeah. Did it. No, I mean, that helps a lot. Like, with my Bigfoot encounter, I don't think I'd be talking about any of it if Luke wasn't saying that, even though Luke doesn't come on and talk about it at all.
One day.
You know, that's my goal.
We'll break him down.
He's getting more and more, like, open to things.
Right.
But I think it was just such an extra hard time on him, because that's also, anybody didn't know, my brother has muscular dystrophy. That's also the kind of time where he really started losing the ability to walk.
Right.
So mom got cancer, we seen Bigfoot, and he started losing the ability to walk.
That's a lot to handle.
So I think it was just, obviously it was a lot more on him than it was on me.
Yeah. But at time, he probably doesn't enjoy reflecting on too much.
And I think that's the big part of it. But Dad will talk about it. And, you know, Dad didn't see it.
He saw the bangs on the garage.
Yes.
Like he saw the evidence.
I don't feel crazy.
Right.
You know, having that extra person makes all, like, Greg, you know, having the other person he had in his car with him.
Right, his wife at the time, yeah.
And that was something I was going to talk to you about, is that doing the show, that's the same kind of thing that happened to us with Greg. Greg Howard, well, I'll edit that out. Make a note.
Where's your pen?
Just text it to me.
All right.
57.
But that's a point I want to make, is that I'll be honest with you. Like, shout out to my wife, Leah. Like, I probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for her. She's the one who encouraged me to come on, like, to do the podcast with Shannon. Mm-hmm. She's kind of pushed me in this direction quite a bit. And you know what? Like, if I didn't have a corroborating witness, I would never have. I just kept it to myself. Like, I never would have said a word. I took it to my 100%. Grave. I'd have took it to my grave. Like, did I see that? I mean, when you see something that is not supposed to exist, you question your own, like, faculties. You're like, am I really seeing this? And
is this real?
And
life?
It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, exactly.
Is this just fantasy?
But I also didn't have her standing next to me and saying, hey, did you see that Bigfoot? Yeah, I saw that Bigfoot. And like,
yeah, it was separate, but
it was
same.
Separate,
yeah.
But right. Same. And like, I made, like, she sketched it, and I have no artistic ability, and thank God my son got her artistic ability. I can barely color inside the lines. But yeah, it was one of those things where, like, had I not had her corroborating, count, you know,
consecutive encounter 24 hours later, I wouldn't know you guys. I wouldn't have went down
isn't
this
how
path.
Weird that life is?
It is. Yeah. I mean literally it was, it's that little thing. And like I said, I kept blowing Shannon off because I was like, I don't want to go on a podcast and get called a liar or like, because I wasn't into podcasts pre 2020. And, you know, Leah's the one who really pushed me to do it. And then, you know, it's like, all right, I'll do this. And then I'm like, you know what? Like, I don't really care what people think. And
right.
I know what I saw. I know what my wife saw. Like, I mean, I know what I'm confident in the reports and the evidence that I've collected since then. That's like today, you know, we were out stomping around and
yeah.
in a marsh and in an area where I'd gathered some little foot or small, you know, hairy hominid encounters.
What was the term you coined?
Which one?
Like for the phenomena.
I call it the Littlefoot Enigma.
Yeah,
is what I like to call it.
That'll probably be the name of the episode.
And I call it that because it's an enigma. Because what is it? Is it
maybe Bigfoot is a separate thing? You know,
right? Yeah. So that like I said, I'm not opposed. I don't marry myself to ideas. I'm not opposed to it being a juvenile Sasquatch. I'm not opposed to it being a relict Homo forensiensis or Australopithecus or Homo nedeli or anything like that. And I'm also not opposed to the idea of a supernatural explanation, like a fae, because you do have these hairy dwarves or these hairy hominids pop up, puckwudgies, in mm-hmm. fae and fairy type lore. So I don't like to marry myself to ideas. I do feel that we should exhaust the rational explanations
first
before we move into the extraordinary explanations. I don't want to say irrational, but like you should hey.
No, I think extraordinary.
Is there a physical mm-hmm. creature out here that is not?
Well,
you know,
we do the same thing in endangered species biology,
right?
Because finding, I don't think people. I've shared it on the show hundreds of times, but I don't think people get how actually rare it was to find some like the top three endangered species we found in my 6-year career. It's insane. I mean, we were doing hundreds of surveys a year. You know, if not 500-600 surveys, and you find them 3 or 4 times in 6 years, it's and they're animals that we have proven that
right,
exist.
Right.
And that's just another step of how, you know, it's the alligator gar, freckle belly manitom, Iowa darters were the big ones.
So I have this raccoon in my neighborhood. I've taken to calling Coonzilla. I swear to God, he's as big around as a 5-gallon. He's a big around as a 5-gallon bucket.
Okay.
So, I've seen him 3 times in the last 2 months. Every morning when I get up, I carry a Streamlight 1 AAA pocket flashlight. I pull my phone, my camera app up on my phone when I leave my house, just in case. I've been doing this for 8 years, haven't seen anything. I've been trying to get a picture of this raccoon for 3 months. I can't get a good one.
You know what? I know how to get a picture of a raccoon.
Oh, I can get a picture of a raccoon. I just can't get a picture of that raccoon.
How to get rid of the boss raccoon, or get a picture of the boss raccoon. And we'll talk off air.
All right.
Oh, you have a picture, right?
But yes. I'm just saying, okay. This is like I mean,
dry
I live...
dry and wet.
I live in Trash Panda Central, I'm telling you. And like...
We did.
I mean, I feel like Huber Heights is damn near Pawnee, Indiana. Like,
oh, Zach Alley. I didn't know.
We've got, it's like Ramsett Square over there.
That's
or Ramsett Park, where we've got raccoons overrunning the place.
Actually, I don't know if she still listens to the show. She listens on and off. Mrs. Alley, if you're listening, thinking about you. Love you.
That was
super
nice
lady.
That was nice.
Now, Zach's mom.
Right.
You never got the chance to meet Zach yet.
Nope, not yet.
Tangentially.
Not till we save the salamanders.
Yes, he's a part of that crew.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, we're over the hour.
Well, okay, I was just going to say, like, kind of to wrap her up. Yeah. So you went from, you know, walking your dog one morning to seeing this thing, and it's led you to this journey to where you've been on Shannon LaGrow's show, you've emceed Encounter Quest, and now you're going to be speaking at Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree, October 5th of this year, at the Ada Park. Is that what it's called?
Ada War Memorial Park
in Ada, Ohio.
Yeah, so we moved out to the park. I know this will probably not be the first time you guys are hearing it. It's the first time we're recording it.
That's true.
But there would definitely be something that comes out before this.
Right.
But yeah, we moved out to the park for more room and better parking and stuff. It's just all around. The festival outgrew the bowling alley really, really, really fast.
Right. Which
after party sale at the bowling alley.
Yeah,
after come party out sale and have some fun. I think Jay said he's closing down the whole bowling alley just for us.
Maybe.
Kinda.
Pretty much.
Ish.
We're all. I mean, he runs there. The bowling alley, so
it's I got kinda, the keys.
It's kinda your call.
He
does have
the keys, and he fixes all the machines.
Yeah.
I know if he leaves for a weekend. Nothing works.
I get a lot of phone calls.
Don't go bowling at the.
That happened the one time where I was like, it's 6:15, watch.
Now, there's probably like maybe one person listening to the show ever that would relate to this, but those machines have a mind of their own. They really do. If you're not there watching them, they know you're not there, they do their own things.
They're basically cast iron dragons.
But I'm not joking.
It's I know weird. You're not joking. Yeah, it's I've weird. Watched you. I watched it.
They got their own consciousness.
No, so. Jake, we're super excited to have you speaking at our event.
I am honored that you guys have asked me to come speak, and I'm super grateful for you guys asking me to fill in for you, Mr. E, at Encounter Quest.
I would have had nobody else do it.
It was a pleasure and an honor.
You were number one on the list.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I mean, literally, I called you while we were still inside the hospital, like before we got into Ronald McDonald, because it just... Jess put a lot of trust into us. That's a big role.
Yeah.
And you were the one I was like, well... If I can't go, that's somebody I trust to do a good job. And you knew everybody, that helps a lot. I don't want somebody that kind of knows the people in the field like and stuff me. Like that. Well, no, at this point, though, we know.
I know. Now I do.
I mean, yeah.
When we first started, I didn't know anybody. I didn't know this stuff.
I'm going to tell a little anecdotal story here real quick.
Yeah, go and ahead.
I hope I don't offend anybody. It's clean, I promise.
Oh, okay, well, but, you just got muted. All right, you're back.
Okay, that's clean, I promise. But after the casting class, after the storm rolled in, and that's a good point right there, because we had a photographer with us. Joe was with us.
I don't know the photographer.
I didn't know if that's who you're talking about.
I didn't want to put anybody's name
out
there.
Yeah, Joe, that's fine. Yeah.
Oh, Joe's a friend of the show.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Hey, Joe. Well,
Joe will be at Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree.
I had a conversation with him because we had this huge storm rolled in out of nowhere real quick, and like a lightning bolt struck a tree.
The trees were falling over.
Yeah,
into the
they
river.
Were falling open. And he's like, man, I'm standing here with a camera in my hand. And I'm so awestruck. I couldn't even move my camera up to record it.
Yeah.
So like when people are like, why don't you get a picture of this? Like, he literally is a professional film photographer, had a camera. He was like, I was just staring at it, and I was like, oh, crap, I should have filmed that.
Yeah.
And so that's one of my anecdote stories. And the second one was we walked into the VIP dinner there, and We walked in, not broke in. Mm. We walked into the dinner, and I will say that, like, there were some more – the VIP dinner was a little more elderly, a lot of gray-haired people there.
Sure.
We got a lot of gray-haired listeners, including myself.
I walked in, and I saw the look – I saw Lyle Blackburn. He was looking – he had a look on his face like, okay. And then we made eye contact, and he was like, oh, thank God. And I was like, all right, cool. This is gonna be all right this week.
Right, yeah. You never thought – like
you don't even understand how fun the gray-haired crowd could be.
You're telling me.
But that's no insult to anybody. I'm just saying that it was one of those things when you walk into a place and – somebody that you've respected for a very long time in this field
makes eye contact with you. It feels,
and was like, oh, man, thank God he's here. I'm like, oh, cool. I'm like, we can make this work, Jay.
Right, yeah.
So I don't want you to spoil anything for your talk, but will you just kind of give the rough working title? Like I said, rough working title.
So my talk will be on what I like to call the Littlefoot Enigma. And we are going to go over all the evidence and how this relates to Bigfoot, how this may not relate to Bigfoot, all the possibilities. I'd like to take a scientific approach, but I do not discard the extraordinary possibilities for this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I always like to keep in mind is follow the evidence, follow the data, and, you know, as Sherlock Holmes said, you know, I believe the quote goes something to the effect of, when you've eliminated the impossible, whatever's left, no matter how extraordinary, must be true.
Right, absolutely. And let's end with that.
All right.
I've been Jay Clune 27. Oh. What?
You've never done it before me.
Oh, darn it.
3.5 years?
You cut him off.
Restart. Let's just. I won't remember to edit this.
Delete this one. Let's start again.
All right. I'm an hour 18 minutes in.
All right.
That's really going to confuse some people because I just set a timestamp that is not real. I have been the great and powerful Mr. E.
And I've been JClone27.
And you've been?
Mr. Jake Dressel. And you can catch me at the Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree on October 5th in Ada, Ohio.
Well, there we go. All right. You know how we like to end these, Jake? We're going to count down for three and we're all going to scream bye. All right. 3, 2, 1.
Bye. Bye.
Hey guys, thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye! Bye.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.